Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com.
HousingWire Daily examines the most compelling mortgage, real estate, and fintech articles reported from the HousingWire newsroom. Each afternoon, the HW Digital team provides our listeners with a deeper look into the stories that are helping move markets forward. Hosted and produced by Alcina Lloyd and Victoria Wickham. And now, here's our host.
Pulled from the hottest topics coming across our news desk, I'm Victoria Wickham, and this is HousingWire Daily. In this episode, HousingWire HW Plus Managing and Magazine Editor Brenna Nath and HousingWire Managing Editor James Kleiman discuss the ongoing saga between United Wholesale Mortgage and Rocket Mortgage and examine how UWM's policy could affect the broker community going forward. But before we listen, here's a brief word on HousingWire's newest podcast.
Right now, more than ever, the housing industry has been having honest conversations about how race impacts the home buying process. To heighten the discussion, HousingWire is launching Honest Conversations, a new mini podcast series to examine the state of minority home ownership in America. For 8 weeks starting in February, please join HousingWire Daily each Wednesday as we aim to provide listeners with a greater perspective on how race, housing, and wealth intersect and what experts are doing to close the home ownership gap.
First off, though, Matt, James, happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you as well, Brenna.
On Matt's name flashed across my screen and it threw everything off. It's a busy day already here at HousingWire. I don't think I mentioned it on the call, but it is a snowy day here. I think we got about 6 inches to 12 inches. So I have my cup of coffee ready to hear all the things kind of going into this week. So first off, for those who don't know, we go live every Monday in our HousingWire Facebook community group. Feel free to watch us live there or catch us later in our podcast feed, HousingWire Daily. I'm joined today with James Kleiman. I don't think I've had the pleasure of interviewing you in a while for Monday Morning Cup of Coffee. So thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great. Jumping right into the first question, the one we always kind of like to ask, we just got off our newsroom huddle, talked about a lot of the things happening this week. There's no shortage of news. What is something that you're particularly interested in right now?
There's so much going on in the housing market. It's hard to know where to start. You know, like even the mortgage space, which we'll get to, I'm sure, is having a pretty interesting moment. You know, the refi boom seems to be waning. And for a lot of LOs and brokers, you know, now is the time to transition to purchase. But that's really hard. And the reason it's really hard is because there's just such little inventory out there. And so if you're the kind of LO or broker who had, you know, a few maybe decent, solid real estate sources to generate leads, but they don't have leads and your refis aren't as plentiful as they once were, this could be a really stressful period. So we're going to be looking at that. But I really want to talk a little bit more about the housing market at large. And so you guys might have seen a story over the weekend from the Wall Street Journal. And I think it was headlined something like, there are now more realtors than listings. Which is bonkers, totally bonkers. And of course, you know, a lot of realtors are part-timers who maybe do a deal or two per year. You know, it's somebody who has like a side job or whatever. But the fact that inventory is as low as it is really stark, and it affects a lot of different people in different ways. And so the story from the Wall Street Journal really highlighted the fact that a lot of real estate agents just got into it because, well, it's really one of the few industries that hasn't been deeply impacted by the pandemic, and certain components of it are like, right, the rental space is really difficult for a lot of investors, even more difficult for the renters who can't pay the bills. But the housing market has been a consistent bright spot. And so it's attracted a lot of agents into the field. But if you're a new agent, you probably don't have the network already set up to be on the sell side. You know, and the sell side is really where you make your money. And the top real estate agents in the country, they don't want to be on the buy side. That's a lot of legwork. You know, you got to go to millions of different, you know, open houses. You have to be constantly looking at your MLS feed. You have to kind of vet listings. You have to make sure that everything is spick and span. If you don't get it right, you're likely to be dropped by your client, you know, who's today more motivated than ever to get a home. And I think this has also started to breed kind of an interesting, in some ways, distasteful element. And I'll relay a personal story here. I mentioned this during our meeting, but my parents live in suburban New Jersey, and it's a super hot housing market. You know, they're right outside New York City. And if you still want to have the benefits of being near the city, you take the train in, you know, you'll be there in 45 minutes to an hour, but you don't have to go to the office every day. You have a little bit more of a flexible schedule. Now you have a backyard and a pool for the kids. It's really, really, really hot. And, you know, a lot of their neighbors that have listed their homes have gotten 10, 15, 20 offers within 48 hours of listing. And so what a lot of real estate agents have done in this area, and this is happening across the country, is what's called pocket listings. And for those who don't know, pocket listing is essentially a home is on the market, but it's not on the market. You know, it's not, you're not going to find it on Zillow. You're not going to find it on realtor.com. Typically what happens is the real estate agent will show it to other agents at their brokerage, or they have, you know, a list of preferred investors, flippers, or, you know, people who want to close with cash, or, you know, they have an agent friend on the team who has a list of buyers on that side. Mm-hmm. And so they'll show it to a very select group of people and, you know, and hopefully they'll still manage to get enough bids for the home seller to be able to close quickly and move on to whatever they're about to get next. And it leads to a lot of ethical questions. The National Association of Realtors has effectively banned the practice, you know, and it was one that was very prevalent in luxury markets. So in California, you know, specifically around the Hollywood area, a lot of people don't want to have their home listed for very good reason, you know, a lot of privacy issues there. So it's a controversial topic, and it really hadn't been a major issue for most of America. You know, how many bidding wars did you hear about in 2018? You know, how many in 2019? Not too many, but in 2020 and 2021, you know, it's maybe half of the homes on the market are seeing multiple bids. And so, you know, suddenly the issues affecting Bloomingdale, Indiana, you know, are the same ones that affected Hollywood. And so a lot of agents are doing pocket listings. And if they're not a member of NAR, there's not much they can do about it. But there are real reasons to think that this could discriminate, you know, a pool of prospective buyers. So it's something we're going to be doing a story on this week for sure.
Yeah, that's something to be closely following, especially kind of how you mentioned just then, like the discrimination aspect. We have a couple stories on the website that are going back into the different ways the industry, the appraisal sector is one thing we were just looking at. How does that have, you know, different levels of discrimination in it, to now looking at this pocket listing area? And that's not a word, I don't think I've heard that come up kind of in the news. Like you said, it used to be just in small, no pun intended, pockets of America. To now see it kind of more across the spectrum. Well, switching sides from the real estate industry, which has been something our industry has been heavily focused on, the market really, not just the industry. Going into the mortgage side of this space, there's just as much going on there. You've been personally closely writing and following these stories as well. So looking at the mortgage side of the, you know, industry, what would you say is a story there that's capturing your attention?
So I've been covering the UWM and Rocket saga for, it's been about 3 weeks now. I think they gave me ulcers, so I'm going to be sending a medical bill to Matt Ishbia and to Dan Gilbert at Rocket. So it's, you know, it's really divided the broker community. And for the pertinent numbers, you know, I think whenever you have a story like this, you're going to find that both sides are going to spin it so that it looks a little bit more favorable to what they feel, you know, captures the essence of what happened. But in this case, I really do think it's a hard one to decipher. And so for those who don't know, back in early March, I think it was March 4th, Matt Ishbia, the head of United Wholesale Mortgage, we call them UWM, they are the largest purchase originator in the country. They're also easily the biggest wholesale lender in the space. So they did about $183 billion in originations last year. And in the broker channel, Rocket, their arch rival, did about $97 billion. And even that was a huge gain on what they had done previously. So Rocket has been growing pretty significantly, but UWM is unquestionably the king of that space. And they've bought a lot of goodwill amongst brokers. They have been honestly an absolute champion of the broker space. They've invested heavily on trainings and on, you know, allowing retail LOs and, you know, folks who are new to the broker space to open up their own shops and to you know, develop close relationships with those in the wholesale channel. And they've also been a big rival of Rocket, and UWM has been pretty steadfast in their opinion that, you know, any company that is not a pure play wholesaler represents on some level a threat to the brokers, you know, and it's not like they're calling for the head of every executive at loanDepot or Guaranteed Rate or Caliber or any of the others, but they have for Rocket, you know, and in UWM's position is essentially that Rocket has this program in which they are training real estate agents to become LOs to effectively underwrite their own loans and originate their own loans, rather, and that this is a very obvious and clear threat that, you know, they don't care about brokers. It was never in their interest. They're agnostic about it. They don't care how they make their money. They just want to make their money. And if they feel like they can save money by having real estate agents originate their own loans and effectively remove the broker from the process, they're going to do that. And then, you know, another company, Fairway, Rocket alleges has been trying to poach LOs from broker shops to you know, effectively run their retail model across the country. And so UWM on March 4th, they effectively sent out an ultimatum saying, hey, if you do business with Rocket and or Fairway, as of March 15th, you cannot do business with us. And, you know, for a lot of the broker shops that didn't use Rocket or didn't use Fairway in the first place, no big deal. You know, this didn't really affect their day-to-day business all that much. Maybe they sent them, you know, a loan or two every now and then, or, you know, they were their fourth or fifth choice, and so that didn't matter. But there's a lot of broker shops that do use Rocket. You know, as I said, $97 billion. We don't have the number for Fairway, but they're not a major player, but, you know, they're certainly in the conversation as a viable partner for some broker shops. And, you know, if you're a company that does 50% business with Rocket and 50% business with UWM, you need to make a choice. And I don't know any broker who I spoke with, and I spoke with over 50 brokers and over 40 LOs over the last 3 weeks or so. I don't know anyone who was happy that they had to make the decision. You know, a lot of people felt like they were forced into something for another person's interests, you know, that this didn't really benefit them. And you know, in terms of the numbers, so when Rocket issued the ultimatum, they had about 12,000 broker partners. That was on March 4th. And there are a few ways to look at this. On March 16th, when the deadline had passed and brokers had to either choose, you know, you work with Rocket and or Fairway, or you work with UWM and you don't work with Rocket and Fairway, they had about 10,400 broker partners. So you could look at it as Rocket ended up losing, you know, they went from 12 to 10.4. And they also, they lost a lot of their own big players. So Loan Factory is one of the biggest brokerages in the country. They did about $4 billion, I believe, in originations last year. Thuan Nguyen, number one mortgage broker in the country. And he's building a little empire. He's got shops in the South and Texas, and he's building up in New Jersey. He's really expanding, and he ended up going to Rocket because he didn't like the ultimatum. And, you know, he felt that it served his business interests better at the time. And so I don't think you can say that what UWM did was unqualified success, but UWM did hobble Rocket for sure. They issued the ultimatum to 4,600 brokerage shops. And of the 4,600, they claim that 3,000 of them signed the addendum, effectively saying, we will no longer work with Rocket and Fairway, we will work with UWM. And then you add the other, you know, thousands of broker shops that have already, you know, de facto worked with UWM and not worked with Rocket and Fairway. And you figure that by UWM's math, they now have 3,000 brokers who cannot do business with Rocket. And that is not a good thing for Rocket, you know, because Rocket doesn't, you know, Rocket doesn't make these kinds of statements. They don't, they haven't used these types of tactics. So Rocket's been growing, and it's hard to grow when you have 3,000 fewer partners to do business with. And in a lot of cases, those are mid-size, you know, and larger broker shops that ended up sticking with UWM. So it's, it's been a pretty crazy period. And, you know, UWM says this is effectively an existential threat. And if you don't act now, then you may not exist in 10 years. And we're the champion of the broker. We're here for you. And, you know, if you want to be alive and thriving, you know, 5-10 years from now, even if that costs you a little bit in the meantime, you know, in the short term, this is the only logical choice to make. And then on the other side, there are a lot of brokers who said, you know, the whole point of being a broker is that I do have choice, that I give consumers the most amount of options, and I give them, you know, the greatest potential deal that I can put in front of them. And I can't in good faith say, well, maybe this is a bit of a threat to my job, so I can't give you a good deal. And so this whole ultimatum cut at the heart of really the identity of the broker and what the space is supposed to look like in a decade. So it's been a tough week for me.
So this narrative really does focus heavily on UWM and Rocket, and then you have the Fair Play as well in the conversation. Where do the other top wholesale companies stand? Like Homepoint, you've talked about them in the past. How do they fit into this story?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it is kind of to be determined, but really when you look at it, so there are only two large wholesale only players, and that's UWM. All they do is wholesale. The entirety of the business is through the broker. And so if they don't grow the broker channel, if they don't grow the number of brokers they can work with, they cannot gain market share. Pure and simple. Their entire business model depends on it. Homepoint is similar. You know, Homepoint is all in, as they say. That's kind of the hashtag of the broker space. Homepoint is all in on the broker channel. And so they've put all their eggs in that basket. In some ways, this benefits Homepoint. So Homepoint would have gone from maybe not being one of the top two or top three preferred lenders for a broker's, you know, list of partners. And now, you know, given that they have to choose between either Rocket or UWM, and Homepoint has been very publicly, they've basically kept out of it. They have had no comments. They have nothing on the record that they want to say about it. They're just going, la, 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 la. You know, we're still here and we don't care. Not our problem. They do stand a benefit in terms of having more business. And they reported during an earnings call last week that they had a record number of signups on their broker platform. On the other side, you know, and here's where it gets a little bit complicated. Homepoint is usually among the lower priced options. They're typically on the first sheet on LoanSifter, you know, and if the benchmark is three, they're going to be pretty much around there. And so what's happened is UWM and Rocket have been cutting their prices because they want to keep as much of, you know, those brokers happy as they can possibly keep happy. And so the margins are really compressing. And Homepoint doesn't have the kind of firepower to deal with a war of attrition with Rocket and UWM. So they're going to be losing margins, you know. And in the earnings call, they reported that margins for the first quarter, which is almost over, by the way, were higher than normal. But they wouldn't say what they were. And it's really rare, really weird for a publicly traded company on their first earnings call as a publicly traded company to not give any kind of guidance on you know, expected income or on, you know, margins, gain on sale margins. And so I have to think that this is going to hurt them really bad, and it's going to hurt them in the second quarter. And it's not like Home Point came in as a, you know, they had a pretty tough IPO debut. They were not well received. The public market didn't fancy Home Point, and they haven't fancied UWM. And aside from, you know, one kind of quirky meme on a Reddit subthread called Wall Street Bets, like Rocket hasn't done, you know, brilliantly either on the public front. So yeah, margins are going to go down. I think financially it's going to be a tough quarter for some of these wholesalers, and you know, it's going to hurt the others like Caliber. It's going to hurt everyone who operates in the wholesale channel. When the two biggest players are cutting their prices, you have to follow suit. You know, you can't be at 3.5 when everyone else is at 3.2. No one's going to use you. You know, like, you're a broker, you can't in good faith tell your clients like, well, look, you know, I just kind of happen to like these guys. I know they're at 3.5, but you know, just stick with it, because they're going to drop you. You're not going to have a client.
I did want to highlight, I shared James's article in the Housing Market Facebook community group, and it was the article on UWM's war with broker brokers must choose a side. And Nick Solos, who we've used as a source before, did comment on that post. And he just mentioned how the CEO of a largest association is telling one group that they should boycott another. So basically, he highlighted the fact that Ishbia compared this to NAR and Zillow. And yeah. Yep. What the impact of that. And so he kind of took that analogy. And what if that did happen? What if NAR did do this similar thing with Zillow? What does that mean? And what does that also mean as people look into the legality of this entire situation? So I wanted to highlight that comment since it was a unique point.
Yeah. You know, and the MBA and some other big industry groups have also come out against Ishbia's ultimatum. You know, they call it anti-consumer, they call it anti-choice. And I think that's not unexpected. And, you know, UWM has effectively said that this is just Rocket trying to get a bunch of like-minded stakeholders on their side, that it's not about the brokers and, you know, but yeah, look, it's an interesting comparison. I think some elements of it kind of fall apart. You know, you're a few steps removed from the consumer, but it does accurately point out that NAR did not fight hard enough in the minds of many real estate agents to beat back the threat of Zillow, and a lot of people resent the fact that Zillow is literally just pulling data from the MLS that these agents are putting in and then effectively charging them for their own data. You know, that's a pretty sour deal for a lot of people. So yeah, you know, I mean, in Matt Ishbia's mind, and I think he really does believe this. I think he honestly does think that the wholesale channel is under siege. And if he doesn't take, you know, really, really quick and drastic action, that they could just get blown out by retail. And if you look at, the size of some of the competitors that they're up against, you know, there are only two pure play wholesalers of any size and stature. And although the broker channel is growing, especially because of the purchase market is so strong, they could totally get eaten up by the whale, you know, and I don't think that Rocket feels as strongly about it as UWM does. You know, certainly it's not really in their business ethos. So it's one to follow. You know, I don't think we're going to know really how this plays out for another 6 months, but
6 months take us all the way through 2021. I'm still getting used to saying 2020 instead of 2020. I do think it's a rare occurrence. If anyone is, and if you're not, feel free to sign up to Lending Life. James writes that every week. It's basically a fresh article in a newsletter form. And then Sarah has her EdNote in the PM every day. And last week, one of the headlines, it was, I think the word, was it the word existential or the word nirvana? It was weird that word was used. I think it was existential used twice in two different articles. One, I think, was a Zillow article. One was around the broker war. And that kind of shows the state of the industry that this unique word popped up twice enough to be kind of the whole center point of her article, her PM note. Well, to wrap, James, we're heading into the rest of the week. Is there anything else you'd like to add or let our listeners know?
I'm going to be doing a story on some of the home builders. So I don't know if you guys saw on, I think it was Wednesday, Lennar which is a major home builder. And they're a little bit different than some of the traditional home builders like Toll Brothers and others that are a little bit more luxury subdivision focused. But Lennar is spinning off pretty much all of their non-core businesses. So they want to be a pure play home builder, you know, and they've had a big investment arm called LenX. I don't know if you stress the Len or the X, but they're going to keep that with their home building division. And they've reported some really interesting and strong gains. And so I wanted to check with some of the other big home builders out there and kind of get a better sense, like D.R. Horton, how are they grappling with some of the problems out there? You know, they're in a lot of cases, they have to buy land, right? And land is expensive and they need construction crews, and that's not fully back either. They have huge supply chain issues, right? The cost of lumber is insane, and there's not a lot of it, and all of the commodities for home building follow the price of lumber, and so they're in kind of an interesting moment, and it's pushing up the cost to build a home. And then on top of that, you know, a lot of these companies also need to get permits done and get them done quickly, and a lot of building departments across the country are not even really open, and some of them that are open are way behind. They're totally backlogged. And so I really wanted to do a focus on kind of how some of the home builders are just trying to work their way through these challenges, and if scale has really been a major benefit for them. So we've got a few conversations a little bit later over the week. And if anyone has any anecdotes or suggestions or anything they want to know specifically about what's going on with the home builders, definitely let me know. You can reach me at J. Kleiman, that's K-L-E-I-M-A-N-N, at housingwire.com.
Probably best to spell it. Make sure you get those two N's in there. I always say it, and then hope for the best from exactly. There. Well, as always, James, appreciate your time. There's a lot of news kind of going across coming across your desk, a lot of our team members' desks. So thanks so much for kind of giving us a deeper dive into what you're specifically looking at, and have a great week.
Thanks. Take care.
Now more than ever, the housing industry is looking to its leaders for answers. That's why each week, the Housing News Podcast invites a new mortgage, fintech, or real estate executive to the show to provide its listeners with more perspective on the announcements and news stories crossing HousingWire's news desk. Hosted by Sarah Wheeler and produced by Alcina Lloyd, the Housing News Podcast is now available on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and more.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode, and we'll catch everyone back here again tomorrow.